thank you very much for the invitation. And well, yes, I'm going to talk about a new approach to cosmic structure formation that we call kinetic field theory. And it's a fully analytical approach that I've been working on together with Matthias Bartelmann from the University of Heidelberg and his group for the last, I think, more than 6 years now. And the old problem that we want to address with this new approach is how to correctly describe and understand how the structures that we see today in our universe have formed and evolved. And, well, we assume that the initial conditions for the structures that we observe today have been set during inflation, and we can see tiny density fluctuations in the cosmic microwave background, and the challenge is to understand how these tiny density fluctuations evolved into these highly nonlinear pronounced structures that we see in the cosmic web, so in dark matter. And well, first of all, what is the difference between kinetic field theory and other analytical approaches? Well, the main difference is that conventionally you start with the hydrodynamical equations. And what you do is set up an evolution equation for the density fluctuations. And so you treat dark matter as a sort of cosmic fluid. The conceptual trouble is that dark matter is not a fluid. And so for dark matter, you form multiple streams where in a fluid you would form shocks. And so your description of dark matter in terms of the unique smooth density or velocity field breaks down at some point. So you get this famous shell crossing problem. With kinetic field theory, we avoid this problem altogether because our approach is particle-based. We never invoke the hydrodynamical equations. What we do is we treat the whole thing as non-equilibrium statistics of n classical, for us, initially correlated particles. And the main object of the theory is a generating functional. And as you would do in any quantum field theory, you derive statistical properties like bandpoint correlation functions in the power spectrum by taking appropriate functional derivatives of this generating function. And before I go on and show you how the theory is set up, I'm just going to show you the result that you get if you use kinetic field theory to describe nonlinear structure formation. So this was the first power spectrum that we published with kinetic field theory. And what you see here is in blue, the result from kinetic field theory. In red, you see a comparison with cosmic emulators, so body simulations. And what you can see that we're doing fairly well in the mildly nonlinear regime where you have baryonic acoustic oscillations. But the beautiful thing is that we actually get very far into the nonlinear regime where conventional perturbation theory in terms of hydrodynamical equations would usually break down. And we're going to use this later on.
So can I ask you a question? Do you have three parameters that you have to?
We have no nuisance parameters.
No nuisance, okay.
Right, so as I said, the approach is particle-based, and what we do is the following. So we work in phase space, and we look at the initial phase space distribution, and then we discretize this phase space distribution so that we can follow particle trajectories in phase space. Since we're working in phase space, we never have a shell crossing problem because trajectories just cannot cross. And we then evolve the trajectories of the particles in time, and after that, we take functional derivatives of the generating functional to get cumulative quantities like density power spectrum. Right. So let's first talk about the trajectories. We use Hamiltonian dynamics and, well, just usual Hamiltonian, and we have potential that's being sourced by density fluctuations. So we set up a Hamiltonian equations of motion. And then we can write down the solution, so the trajectory, as in terms of the initial values of the positions and momenta of the particles. And, well, the Hamiltonian equations of motion can be solved by Green's function, That's what we write down. And so we have this propagator DQP that we will need to provide. So for simple Hamiltonian dynamics, this would be just the difference between your initial and final time. And then, since we have interactions in our system, we have this extra term that encodes the force between interacting particles. Okay? And just for compact notation, I'm now going to introduce this tensorial quantity x, which simply bundles all the trajectories of all the n particles in our ensemble. Okay? And it's the same as before. So we have here the Green's function that solves the free Hamiltonian equations of motion. We have the initial particles and momenta. And then we have a term that contains the modification of the free trajectories if we have interactions present. And so I'm going to refer to this inertial motion sometimes as a free motion. And so, and this will be the interacting term. Now, I'm going to say this now because it's important to note that we can choose the free propagator, so we can make this split into the inertial motion and the interaction motion as we like. We just need to provide a suitable propagator, and then we need to modify this force that is in here so that it describes the force now relative to the propagator that we have chosen. I'll come back to that later, just mentioning this point. Okay.
Why is there a free choice? I mean, I don't understand that.
You can, for instance.
The GPF corresponds, you know, to the effect of the initial momentum.
But you can make a transformation of your time coordinate, which can be a clever thing to do for cosmology. Because I will show this later, but you can use the Zeldovich approximation. And you can encounter or account for part of the interactions already in this inertial motion. And then this interaction term becomes small compared to what you call your free motion.
OK, so the assumption is that all motions come from gravity.
Yes.
OK.
Right. So now we have a particle dynamics, and we know how to provide the solution for the equations of motion. Obviously, we won't be able to exactly solve the equations of motion for an interacting system. So we will have to find out how to deal with this interaction term later on. So let's set up the main object of the theory. So it's just a generating functional, and as usual in QFT, it's just a path integral over some probability distribution. Now, so this is what is written here, but instead of using fields in kinetic field theory, we use point particles. So these will be the particle positions and momenta, or you can think of them as particle trajectories. And I'm going to introduce a source field J here already, like you do in QFT, so you can later on take derivatives with respect to this source field to recover information about your statistics. Now, I'm going to rewrite this probability in terms of an initial probability distribution for particle positions and momenta, and a transition probability, which describes how particles starting at initial positions and momenta then evolve to some final positions and momenta. And then I'm going to just introduce a shorthand notation to describe the initial probability distribution. This integral is d gamma, so it's a phase-based measure. And then I'm going to be using the property of our system that we have classical particles. So we have deterministic equations of motion, and so we can write this transition probability as a delta function, which picks out just the trajectories that obey the classical equations of motion, okay? And then we can perform the final path integral, and this will replace all the possible trajectories that the particles can take in phase space by just the ones that obey the classical equations of motion, okay? And this is our main object. So we need to provide initial conditions and the solutions to the equations of motion.
Sorry, are you integrating over x bar or not?
No, I'm integrating of the x.
Okay, but the x bar is a function of x?
X bar is a function of the initial positions and momenta. So not of x, which, so the x would contain q and p, which depend on time.
Right.
And we just end up having the initial q and p.
Right. What's gamma?
Sorry?
Gamma.
Gamma is just this object, so the initial phase-based distribution of positions and momenta.
Sorry, that x bar is all the classical trajectories.
Exactly.
So they're a function of x and t.
Yes. Okay. So now that we have the generating functional, we can take we can compute endpoint correlation functions just as you would do in QFT. So to get the endpoint correlation function, you need to apply some appropriate density operator to the generating functional, set the source to zero, and then you have your endpoint correlation function. Now, in order to construct this density correlation function, we look at the number density of particles, which is just the sum of the delta peaks wherever we find a particle. We take the Fourier transform, and then to promote this number density now to the number density operator, we simply replace now the particle positions by a functional derivative of the source field that couples to the positions in our generating function. Okay, like you would do in QT, right? And then you can apply this operator to the generating functional and you can compute endpoint correlation. Now, if you do that, this exponential of the derivative here will generate simply a translation. So you will end up with Z of J plus a shift vector L. And after setting the source field to zero, you will just end up with the generating function that now depends on a shift vector L. And this is what you need to evaluate. So you will still need to take the integral over your initial conditions. Okay. Right. So now before we do cosmology, I just want to point out that this theory is completely general up until now. And what you can also do is apply the theory to other systems, like, for instance, laboratory systems, where you can explore the theory a bit more, so you can benchmark the theory, and you can try out different scenarios that just don't come up in cosmology. And this is part of what I've also been doing. Right. So I've applied the theory to so-called Rydberg gases, so it's just a gas consisting of Rydberg atoms. And Rydberg atoms are highly excited atoms where you pull the outer electron into a state with a very high principal quantum number, so it's very far away from the nucleus, and you create a tiny dipole. And this tiny dipole will then have an effect on the surrounding ground state atoms, and it will shift the excitation frequency of the surrounding ground state atoms by a certain amount so that they can no longer be excited by the driving field. So they're out of resonance with the driving field. Okay. And in this way, you can only excite, so this forms a Rydberg blockade with a certain radius. And this way, you can only excite atoms at a minimal distance. So you have to have a certain separation to be able to excite another ground state atom into the Rydberg state. And then, so these systems are interesting for experimental physicists because they're quite large and can easily be observed. And this is also a project that I did with an experimental group. And so we can look at these Rydberg atoms as they evolve in time and what happens to the structures. And since we have this Rydberg blockades, so we can only excite atoms at a certain distance, we have initially an anti-correlation function that is given like this. So you cannot have any Rydberg atoms within this radius. And so if you apply magnetic field theory to the system, we can actually predict, so this is comparison with numerical simulations now, you can actually predict the evolution of the system to very short scales. And in this way, we see that the theory works even for extremely different initial conditions than we have in cosmology, and also for very short-ranged interaction potentials as compared to cosmology. Okay, so this is just benchmarking the theory. But it's also interesting because nonlinear structure formation isn't just an issue in cosmology. So it's interesting to see where we can go with this using kinetic field theory. And another toy system is you don't have to use a particle positions and momenta. You can replace your Hamiltonian by any other Hamiltonian. And what I did is to replace the Hamiltonian that I've shown you before by the Ising Hamiltonian to now describe spins. But classical spins, so they're basically spinning tops on a chain. And the interesting thing, so this was just a proof of concept, how to set up the theory for this. And an interesting thing would be to combine the two. So to have moving particles, which have an extra property, it doesn't have to be the spin. And then you can look at correlations in the system. Okay, and you can do all of this within one theoretical framework. Right.
Can I just ask the time evolution in that case is following your switching off the driving field? Is that what happens?
Sorry, again?
You switch off the driving field. Is the driving field switched off at t equals zero?
Here?
Yeah.
Yes, yes, you excite them into the Rydberg state, and then they just evolve, and then they can go inside the Rydberg blockade radius because it doesn't play a role anymore.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Right, so let's get back to cosmology. Now I'm going to specify kinetic field theory so that we can do cosmology with it. So the first thing is the choice of propagators. And as I said, you can split up the free motion, what you say is the free motion or the inertial motion and the interaction term as you choose, if you can transform the time coordinates properly. And a good choice for cosmology is to choose the propagator such that your inertial motion already reproduces linear growth, because then the interaction term will describe the force relative to this propagator. And you can, for instance, you have better conscience if you do perturbation theory with it. And so what we choose is the so-called Zeldovich trajectory. So it's just basically the Zeldovich approximation. We transform the time coordinate such that it is now given by the linear growth factor. Okay, and so we reproduce linear growth with our inertial motion. What we actually do is to use improved Zeldovich trajectory, which have another property. They slow down the re-expansion of structures. So when you use Zeldovich trajectories and your particles get close enough together, you prevent them from dissipating again. So they stick together. So we prevent re-expansion of structures. Right, and then when you have chosen your propagator, you need to define the relative force in your interaction term such that you now account for the fact, so this is this term I'm not going to explain, but this term accounts for the fact that now part of your interaction is already in your inertial propagator. Okay, so that you do everything consistently. So with this, with the choice of propagators, that now the definition of the relative force to the propagators, we can write down the solutions to the equations of motion in a formal way for now. And second thing that we need are the initial conditions. We take the initial conditions as we see them in the CMB. ZIMB has a very well measured density power spectrum. And what you need to do is to sample the density field that you have in the ZIMB by particles, because our whole description works in terms of particles. Okay, so if you do that, you end up with, after lengthy calculation, you end up with this multivariate Gaussian form for the initial conditions. Now it describes the initial particle positions and momenta in phase space of our particles. You have a normalization constant, which just contains the determinant of the correlation matrix. You have an operator here, and then you have the sporadic form. And this sporadic form now contains the correlations between particle momenta. And this operator contains density correlations and cross correlations between density and momenta. It turns out that for cosmology, you can set this thing close to one because you do have initial density and cross correlations between momenta and density, but they get washed out very quickly. So if you're interested in endpoint correlation functions, so the power spectrum today, which would be at late times, then this thing would be just negligible. And so the only thing that you need to worry about is this quadratic form. So as I said, it contains the momentum correlations, and they can be now fully characterized by a density, by an initial density power spectrum that we take from the ZIMB. Okay, so we know it very well. This is what we need to provide. The trouble now is that you take this initial probability distribution, plug this in here, and now you still need to take the integral over the initial positions and momenta. But now you have this indexed exponential, your initial positions and momenta, and you have them in the quadratic form here. So it's not trivial to take this integral. What you would normally do is to expand in orders of this correlation matrix. You can do that, and a nice property that we've seen is that if you have switched off now the interaction term in your generating functional, so you have a free generating functional, so with your particles are moving on inertial trajectories. If you do this expansion of your initial conditions in term of CPP, then you can see that you can resum these terms that you've expanded and reorder them. And so this whole free generating functional actually factorizes, and we can take into account all the initial momentum correlations that we have in the system. And I'm going to show in a minute why this is cool. And so and then you can simply write down the two-point correlation function. Doesn't matter. You have your damping term here in the exponential. And then you have this curly P, which is now the evolved inertial power spectrum, which contains the momentum correlations in this term A, which are being evolved by your inertial propagator. And now you can look at the effect that the mere presence of momentum correlations has on the power spectrum. So we haven't taken into account the force term, so the interaction between the particles now, except for to reproduce linear growth. And this is what you get. Okay, so this is the effect of the initial momentum correlations on the nonlinear power spectrum. You can see here, this is the important range. So here, the presence of momentum correlation actually dominates the shape of the power spectrum in this regime. And here we have, just to illustrate how the power spectrum is formed, we have switched off part of the diffusion. So once structures have formed, we don't allow them to re-expand again, just to see better the effect that the initial correlations
would you
have.
Do that in the equations. So you have that. Basically, you have there's a Lovish approximation.
Mm-hmm.
That part, I guess, that gives you that result. But the part that when they cross each other, they stick together. I mean, is that how do you do that in the equation?
We have. So basically, we know what the ensemble diffusion term looks like, and then we have gradually switched it off. So you don't have to. You can just leave it at that. But then this power spectrum, so your structures would wash out at small scales. You get washing out of structures.
Sorry,
but
gives the washing out. So you're saying if there is this thing you mentioned that particles cannot cross each other. Or is that correct or not?
In phase space, yes.
But in real space, can they cross or not?
Well, yes.
Yeah, they can cross. Okay. Okay. So then that's just a standard Z Lovish. Okay.
So is that true? Like what he said? Like the red curve is just normal Zeldovich power spectrum?
No, the red curve is not just normal Zeldovich power spectrum. It's particles on Zeldovich trajectories, but now with the presence of initial momentum correlations. And they do have an effect on
there
this
are
range.
Initial momentum correlations in normal Zeldovich comes from the normal power spectrum. So I'm not following, I guess, what.
But
now
you can actually. So what you see is that you have only accounted for the momentum correlations, and now you see that they are the most important ones that are actually reproducing this deformation.
What else is there? I mean, it's just the initial momentum correlations give you everything. So, I mean, the Lovish itself doesn't tell you the initial conditions. You have initial momentum correlations plus evolution, and you assume the Lovish evolution, right?
So I think Naresh is saying the success of that red curve in the white band, isn't it just the success of the Zeldovich conservation?
Well, it's not a success. It's just that you can. You have assumed Zeldovich trajectories, so you do have the fact that you do reproduce the linear growth is due to the Zeldovich trajectories. True.
But the correction to.
But the correction to the
also captured by the Zeldovich.
Exactly. So. Okay, so now what we can do is go back and add interactions into our system. So, and as I said, we can't just give the solution to the full equations of motion, so we need to find a way to treat interactions in our system. And we have now two ways to do that. One is perturbative, so you pull out an interaction operator from your generating functional, which is then applied to the free generating functional, which does not include interactions. And this interaction operator now contains the interaction potential between your particles. For cosmology, this would be just the Newtonian one of our interaction potential. Right. And in order to, so and we need to introduce a second source term so it can mediate the effect of the interaction potential on the free trajectories of the particles. Okay. And so in order to apply this operator, we need to expand this exponential into Taylor series. And so this is what's written here. And so basically we are sort of expanding in terms of how many particles are involved in the interaction. So do we have just two particle interactions, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7? Right. And then you can again apply the density operator that we have constructed before to get the nonlinear density power spectrum. Now, the issue with this approach is, so one of the issues of this approach is, that we can't use the result from before, where we can take into account all the momentum correlations, but which are the most important. So here in this approach, we would need to expand or take into account initial momentum correlations just order by order, okay? And then you have to worry about when to truncate and so on, and you have a damping term, you don't know what to do with this. So we needed an approach that allows us to take in the result of the initial momentum correlations together with interactions. And what we did is to set up a sort of mean field approach to include now this interaction term. So we evaluate the interaction term, so the force between particles, in sort of average sense. We can pull it out of the generating functional in an evaluated form already, just write it in front as a factor, and then we can just multiply it with the result of the free generating functional like this, which includes the full hierarchy of momentum correlations.
So can you remind us, what was QD?
QD is a damping term that comes out, so that you get when you include just the correlations, momentum correlations. Sorry.
What is the expression? Do you have an expression?
Yes, we do have an expression. So it's basically a ensemble diffusion term.
Okay. And this damping corresponds like to a damping of.
When you, so basically a damping of, well, of.
Like, so you're saying that this QD corresponds to a damping of evolved power spectrum compared
yes.
to the
yes.
initial power spectrum?
Yes. So basically, when you have particles and they are interacting, or they're meeting, and then you have a washing out of structure again because they just fly through.
That's what would happen without the damping term. They would pass through. But somehow this, so it's a bit counterintuitive.
No. The damping term is responsible for washing out structure.
So why does that capture the structure more accurately? Because in the real case, the structure, when it forms, stabilizes. So it's a bit counterintuitive that damping makes it more fit the simulations more accurate.
Well, not if you don't have the full interaction term, it doesn't.
So the absence of interactions, they would just pass through each other.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if you didn't have
the presence of interactions and stops them from passing through each other.
Yes, exactly. But this will be described by the interaction term here.
So the damping is sort of removing some part of the free theory. Sorry, the damping is, you're putting the damping in, is the damping is just calculated from the free theory.
Mm-hmm. So this, I will show this quantity in a minute, I think. And you will see that if you don't include the damping term,
yeah.
it washes out the structure, you would overpredict the structure formation horrendously. Okay, so you really need the physics that is encoded in this diffusion term.
And this SI, then you're saying, then corresponds to then the
extra force term that you have, the interactions.
And then it sort of cancels out then the damping that you would have gotten in the absence of?
Yes.
Yes, in the absence of interactions.
Yes.
Okay, all right.
So the interactions are having a huge effect on the free theory.
Yeah.
They are.
So this.
Removing this washing.
Yeah, so you get a lot of structure on small scales. With this term, you need correct damping to cancel out these structures that you just physically don't have, which is described by this damping term. But then you would end up with particles on Zeldovich trajectories. Okay, to account for the rest of the interaction that you have due to gravity, you need this interaction term. And this will give you the full nonlinear power spectrum.
But you are saying the interactions completely alter the free behavior on small scales. Your free behavior is described by the QD term.
Yeah. So the interactions will give you extra power on these scales, so on small scales.
Zelbovich was giving you extra power already.
Yes, but this was switching off part of the damping. Okay, which we don't do now. So now we just write down what we have derived here, and this is what we plot, and then we have the interaction term. Sorry, it's a bit confusing.
What you get with SI and without SI?
I don't think I have the plot here, but I can show you.
Okay. Could you just sketch it maybe on the blackboard? Just quantitatively.
I do have it. I will show you in a minute. In another plot, yes. Okay. So this mean field approach allows us to take in the whole hierarchy of momentum correlations. And this interaction term is evaluated as follows. We sit at the position of each particle, and then we look at the net force that it feels from the presence of all the other particles. In a completely isotropic and homogeneous universe, there would be no net force, because the force would just cancel out. But what we do is we now weigh every so the forces between each particle pair by their correlation function, theta. It's an heuristic approach. Okay, so we don't have a really fundamental derivation of why this works, but you see that it gives quite good results. Right. So, and then?
So is that correlation linear correlation? Is that what that means? You're weighting all pairwise forces
by the correlation function between this particle.
Linearly evolved correlation function, or a non-linearly evolved correlation function that you computed through this procedure?
By a linearly evolved correlation function. Right. If you do that, you get extra power on small scales. And so this is the nonlinear power spectrum with mean field approach. And so here's the KFT is now in red, and numerical simulations are in black. We left out the BOs, but never mind. And so what you can do now that you get into these highly nonlinear regimes is you can look at the highly nonlinear structures that form here, so you can look at dark matter halos. And so what we do is we ask.
Before this, mm-hmm. if you go back, sorry.
To this?
Okay. This graph. Okay, so black you said is just full n-body simulation, and then the red is all this.
It's the final result of kinetic field theory. So.
And so on linear scales, I mean, it's doing pretty terribly then, right?
Yes, I'm going to show why later on.
Right, just a little bit terrible.
Yeah, so you mean here? No, so I mean, did you say linear or non-linear?
Well, so a k of 0.1, 0.2, it's doing surprisingly bad.
Well, I'm very close to saying that it's not too far, is that what you...
These are the scales where perturbation theory should be extremely accurate, right?
Because, well, I mean, they have Newton's parameters so they can tune their... result. I'm going to talk about this part and how to fix this. So
it's just surprising that it needs to be fixed. I mean, you would think that any kind of perturbative expansion would work well on k of 0.1, 0.2 at pressure of zero.
But so this is a non-perturbative result. So this is a closed expression that I'm showing now.
Because you have this linear correlation function that you're putting in.
Yes, but this is not really a perturbative. So okay, you can do perturbation theory then in this average interaction term, but this is just we have only taken into account correlations between two particles, You should do better if you could include the full hierarchy of initial correlations. So if you include also correlations between three particles, four particles, and so on.
So if you like, the noise in that approximation can appear at long wavelengths.
But there's
maybe not too surprising, because the great thing about Zelbovich is it's all completely local, whereas these approximations are in k-space, and maybe it's not surprising that there can be power leaking into
This was the first attempt at such a mean field approach, and we're doing badly here, and I'm going to show why and how to fix it. So we figured out that we're actually overestimating the growth of structures on these scales. Okay. But it's connected to the dark matter halos.
Because of your estimate of the interaction term?
Yes, because actually, I'm going to mention it. We want to look at dark matter halos, and we want to look at them because we want to understand. You know that dark matter halos have a certain density profile, so the NFW density profile, and that you find this NFW profile for dark matter halos on all scales. So this is this self-similarity, universality feature that you have. And we want to get a clue what actually sets these profiles and what's responsible for the universality feature. And so what we do is we want to find out what does the interaction potential actually do to the nonlinear structures at these scales where halos live. And so we're going to look at the nonlinear power spectrum, and we're basically going to look at the structures that would correspond to the one halo term, if you think about the halo model. So in these regimes at k greater 1, we will have the inner structures of halos will dominate the nonlinear power spectrum. And so the power spectrum in this regime, so it's basically one halo term, will be the integral over the halo mass function and the halo density profile. Now, we can compute with KFG the nonlinear density power spectrum, which should include the appropriate halo profiles because we reproduce the results from the numerical simulations and they see NFW profiles. We also have access to the halo mass function. This is the nonlinear power spectrum, so we're going to look at these scales, and these are our first results for the halo mass function. I'm not going to talk about this in detail, but what we can do now is, since we know this from KFT,
So you know the mass function from this kinetic field theory? I didn't follow.
We can use the same formalism to access the density power spectrum, and we indirectly, we use KFT to compute the mass function. It's actually based on, we use KFT, the cumulants from QFT, to constrain a Gauss-Lock-Normal model for the probability distribution function, which we then use in the excursion approach to derive the halo mass function. We can't.
Is that what you think of as applying to the linear density field? But now you're applying the excursion set now to this.
What we want in the end, what we would like to have, is to be able to sample the density field that we produce at final times. Okay, so the structures that we have formed, we would like to sample the density field and to derive the halo mass function from that. That's what we would like to have. We don't have that. Instead, what we do is we say that this density field can be described by a Gauss log normal model for the probability for the probability distribution function of halos today. And this probability distribution function, so this model we fix with, so it takes cumulants of your density fields. And these cumulants we compute from KFT. Okay, so we take the information that we need on the density field today from KFT, but we model the probability distribution function by a Gauss log normal model.
And then from this model for like the one point function, then you're trying then to back out like a distribution of halo.
Yes.
Sizes.
Yeah. And then we use the.
Okay. All right.
I can.
Do you know how good that approximation of log normal is?
I think it's okay, but.
Have you checked it against that body simulations?
Not that I know of, no.
I think I remember people have talked about log normal being a good approximation, but I mean, of course.
But on quasi-linear scales.
Yeah.
Quasi-linear scales.
Yeah. But this is just like, this was the first attempt to derive a mass function using KFT, okay? It's an indirect approach. A direct approach would be if we could come up with a method to directly sample the density field and then from this obtain the information on the halo mass function. But we don't have that.
I don't see how you separately, I mean, like, so the approach is to take like the one point function of the density field and then somehow then convert that into a mass function. But to do that, you have to know what the density profiles all the halos are to do that.
No, that's what I said. We can't do that, what you're describing.
Uh-huh.
We can't do that. We have to model the density field with the Gauss log normal model beforehand. And the constraints for the Gauss log normal model are computed from kinetic field theory.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So you have this model for the one point function of the density field.
Mm-hmm.
But even given that model, now to convert that into a distribution of halo masses.
Yeah, we just use.
You have to assume something about the profiles of the halo.
Oh, for this, yes, true. This was, sorry, the result for NFW.
Oh, okay, so.
So this was just the usual approach, exactly. So we didn't.
NFW is with concentrations measured from simulations. And now taking. Okay, like, so. Okay. Okay, but if you do that, why not just take a mass function from simulations?
Yes, but I mean, but if you don't want to run simulations for certain conditions, I mean, this is just basically this was the first attempt. What you would actually need to really get the mass function from KFT is to be able to sample the outcoming density fields that you get with KFT. We're working towards that, but we don't have that yet. Okay. So, I mean, you could also use the, so okay, so first let me say that, so what I want to do is to now change the interaction potential between particles from the 1 over r Newtonian potential to some other power law potential and just see what kind of effect this produces on the nonlinear scales. And from this, I hope to be able to say something about the density profiles of halos. Okay. And the question is, can we recover NFW? And can we, at some point, say something about the self-similarity feature, where it comes from, what kind of physics is actually responsible for that? Right. And so I did that for both the perturbative approach, where you expand the interaction operator.
So
and
you're changing the Poisson equation here?
Yes.
But it doesn't change linear scales, it's only affecting.
No, so I'm not plotting the linear scales here because they do look differently. with the change Poisson equation. But for the perturbative approach, I can actually identify the a term that corresponds to the one halo term, and I look only at that. Okay. And so, and I'm only interested in looking at the slopes here. I just want to see if it actually changes the slope. Okay. And so, surprisingly, for the perturbative approach, when I scale up the this one halo, corresponding term that corresponds to the one halo term in KFT, I can see that the slopes here remain the same, or very, very close to the same value as you would get for an 1 over r potential, even if I change them to 1 over r to the power of 3 potential. So the slopes here in this highly nonlinear regime seem to be insensitive to the potential shape, which is odd. Right, if I do the same thing, to the mean field approach, I, on the other hand, get a very high sensitivity to the interaction potential, because now here from the 1 over r to the power of 2 potential, I get way too much structures on small scales. Okay. And so now we don't know what is actually closer to the correct answer. You could, of course, say, well, we need higher perturbation, orders of perturbation here, to see if we gain power on smaller scales. But if we do gain a very large amount of power here, then we know that a perturbation approach is invalid, so this wouldn't help. But we also see that for the mean field approach, we produce just so much structures that it can't be true. Okay, so we're doing something wrong here. And so, now to your question from earlier, this line here, this corresponds to this term, to the term including the full momentum correlations with the damping term.
So you're saying that it means for the Lovich approximation, or
sorry?
So the solid curve is what? What is the solid curve here?
The solid curve is particles evolved on Zoldovich trajectories with the full momentum correlations taken into account.
The dashed curve.
This is the dashed curve.
Ah, so then what is the solid curve?
The solid curve is the full nonlinear power spectrum.
Is from simulations or from?
From KFT.
From KFT, okay. So.
And now the same thing as the black solid curve, now for 1 over r to the 2 potential. Okay, so the most important thing to note is that way too much structure. And we have to fix that, we have to know what is going wrong. And so obviously...
I'm not sure it's way too much structure. I mean, has anyone done a simulation with 1 over r squared potential?
No.
Because they're rather stable orbits, so everything would just collapse to infinite density points. So it may be like that.
Could be. I don't know if this is true. So for me, it looks like it's too much structure.
Sure. Okay. Why do you care about 1 over r squared potential?
We don't particularly care about it. It's just to change the interaction potential from the Newtonian 1 over r and to see what happens. To see what it does to the power spectrum on nonlinear scale.
Well, I mean, something less pathological would be probably more interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very
I think this is, it's pathological, yes, but it's also like a very simple case where I don't have to worry about other effects. So if I would take, for instance, some kind of modified gravity, I would maybe introduce other effects that I have to think about, and this is just really very, very, very simplistic.
All right.
Right. Okay. So, and what we notice is that for this case, we must do something. We must be doing something wrong, because we have a broken balance between this damping term here and the attractive force. And the it's not a solution, but a first hint that we have could be derived if we test the validity of this averaging scheme. So are we doing something wrong there already for gravity? And is this just enhanced if we change the interaction potential extremely? Okay. And so we did check the averaging scheme, and we realized that we are actually overestimating structures, because we have correctly accounted for that we have to define a relative force to the inertial motion that we choose. But this inertial motion already leads to linear growth on Zeldovich trajectories, right? And now if we just plug in again the full interaction potential, the 1/r potential, into this force term, we're actually assuming that this interaction potential is being sourced by all the density that we have. So the one that leads to linear growth and the one that would in addition lead to nonlinear growth. So what we do now is to say that the additional force that comes in addition to the linear growth, that it must be sourced only by the density that is actually responsible for the nonlinear growth, that is basically on top of the density that you would have if you only had linear growth. And this results in an effective potential where we now have this, which has now this Yukawa form, and we can self-consistently from KFT derive this scale, which gives us a cutoff. Okay? And when we use this now, we get better results on mighty nonlinear scales, but we also lose power on small scales. Okay, so and here it would be advisable to look at the scheme to include the interactions and maybe set up a perturbative scheme to now also account for correlations between three and more particles. So maybe this will give us more power on these small scales. Okay, so this is a preliminary result
what
now.
What are those different curves? Sorry.
This is the comparison to a numerical, so it's basically halo fit. This pale red one is comparison to Smith et al. From 2003, and this red one is to Mead et al. From 2015, I think. It's just the newer numerical result. And now the hope is, so as I said, this is preliminary, so we're still working on this to make this right for the Newtonian case. But what you would get is for all the other potentials that I'm using, so for the power law potentials, is you would need to do the same modification. You would also need to define an effective form of the potential, where you have now a function that depends on a cutoff scale, and here would be just the Fourier transform of your potential. Okay, and now we believe that this will really lead to a consistent description of the evolution of the structures, and we hope that we can restore this. This balance between damping and interaction terms, so we can describe this really correctly. And what I also expect is to get less structures on small scales. But I won't get rid of all of them. Right. So this is basically the next step of what we need to do. Right. So what we have now is a nuisance parameter-free analytic description of nonlinear structure formation that allows us to probe physical effects on dark matter structure formation. We have different schemes to include interactions between particles, and we believe that the most powerful one will be this mean field, this closed expression for the nonlinear density power spectrum. And we can now know that we have, that we can, and we know how to construct effective interaction potentials in this mean field approach. And what we can also do, we can extract information on halo profiles from the nonlinear power spectrum. And so what the next steps will be to, we will need to recompute the density power spectrum with this effective modifications, with this effective potential, like we did for the Newtonian case. It would be great if we could at some point directly compute the halo mass function for KFT with different potential slopes. But I think this is a long way away. And so what we could also use is the halo mass function if it is provided from a simulation, for instance, with an appropriate potential that is different from the Newtonian case. And I believe that with this, we can then say something about halo profiles, and to do this in KFT has the advantage that we have an expression for the physics, and we can play around with this, okay? Unlike in simulations. And what we also need to do, as I said, we have now lost some power on nonlinear scales with a mean field approach, and we need to make corrections to the interaction term as it is now to recover this power. And what we can do in the perturbative approach and what we would like to do with this mean field approach is to compute higher order spectra, which we don't know how to access for now. Okay, this is it from my part. Thank you for the questions. And if you have more, go ahead.
Other questions? Thoughts on how KFT could incorporate massive neutrinos?
You could do it with by changing the initial power spectrum, for instance, I guess. So if you have massive neutrinos, you would get a cutoff at small scales, right? In the power spectrum. Yeah. Exactly. And you could use this initial power spectrum then with KFT and just replace the one that we're using now and then do the same computation. So we haven't been doing massive neutrinos, but we've done axions with KFT, where we have also used a different initial power spectra that would correspond to different masses of axions.
But there would be another effect, which is your particle mass will change, the effective particle mass will change at late times, so the neutrinos behave more.
Yeah, so we would need to introduce some kind of pressure term.
Yes, so why is that difficult to do? You're not treating it like a fluid, so you just have phase-based density. Random.
Yes, we do this kind of thing. We've done it in order to incorporate baryons. I guess you could maybe try an approach like this for massive neutrinos too.
I think in general it would be interesting to compare the prediction in those specs to n-body simulations that do include neutrinos to see how accurate you can be when you make a non-neutral.
We haven't really thought about this.
So did you say non-trivial cosmology?
Yeah.
As opposed to trivial.
Yeah, I mean, changing the cosmology with KFT is fairly easy if you just change your Poisson equation such that your growth factor in the end remains only time-dependent, so you don't get a decay-dependent, so this can fail fairly easy, and we've already done this concerning non-trivial cohomology.
Question?
Yeah.
In the particle description, when you set up your initial conditions, what does it mean to have a purely growing mode? Is that incorporated in the momentum correlations, or where does that come from in this particle?
What I'm not sure what
well,
you mean.
Well, the usual cosmological picture of fluids,
yes.
You select the growing mode
yes.
only from the initial conditions.
Ah, okay.
So how does that translate into your assumptions about the initial conditions for particles?
I'm not sure you can think about this in this way, because we just assume we have a density field and we just sample it with particles, so we're not really thinking about growing modes.
I think you are, because you're assuming the Lagrange trajectory.
Okay, in that sense, yes. In
momentum with position.
In that sense.
Which you are assuming.
So yes, so
G of T.
Yeah, we correlate momentum in positions initially by assuming that continuity still holds.
Yes.
And that's so we say we have okay.
That's choosing a growing mode.
Okay.
So that Green's function is the growing mode.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's built into G. So, you know, a nasty question. When you're trying to do something non-conservative, obviously, which is difficult, since there's no small expansion parameter.
Mm-hmm.
And so are you hoping, in effect, to discover some small expansion parameters around some non-linear answer?
So, yeah, I mean, so you were talking about the non-perturbative approach now? But okay.
Any calculation.
Okay, so in
I don't think
we've tried to find one because it would be useful in some cases, but we haven't been able to. So in when we do perturbation theory, so this perturbative ansatz where you expand in terms of the interaction potential, we actually think we're expanding in terms of the interaction potential. We think this gets smaller and smaller as you have cosmic expansion.
So that's
it's not the hope, that's kind of the picture you could think of.
Right,
but
doesn't really work.
But no, it's not not really an expansion parameter. We don't have that. But yeah. You have any ideas how to get
it's a hard problem.
Question?
Yeah.
Thank you again.
Thank you very much.